Hi, I'm Karen Quayle, co-founder of Noodles Canine Rescue.
Hi, I'm Aaron O'Reilly, also a co-founder of Noodles Canine Rescue.
Karen, where did this all begin?
We, I guess, accidentally all came together as a group, would be the short answer. Elvis went missing last year in May, and it was a five-week search in Arch Elegant Plantation. A lot of us were involved in that search and learned a lot, basically, about how to recover missing dogs. So after that happened, another dog, Susie, went missing 2 weeks later. And at that point, we were like, right, there is a demand for this on the Isle of Man. And again, lots of volunteers had been involved. We all sort of came together and said, let's start doing this as a hobby, a volunteer hobby at that point. So yeah, that's pretty much what happened. And here we are now.
And of course, one of the things that makes it considerably easier for the searches is the use of a drone, isn't it, Aaron?
Absolutely, yeah. The drone, which was completely crowdfunded by Manx residents, has been a game changer. So Karen found very quickly on that Elvis search that one of the things that was going to make the job easier would be a drone. And at the time, there was no one on island with one. And that resulted in you hiring one from England quite a few times. I'd been watching the Elvis search quite closely and going up when I could in my spare time. And it was just an idea I'd had before even sort of linking up with the guys. This is something the island needs. The rest is history, really. Here we are now with a drone and a number of successful recoveries.
And I suppose one of the good things about the drone is that it can sort of do heat sensing, can't it?
Yeah, so it's a thermal imaging camera, so it will discriminate between the heat temperature of the dogs or other animals. Quite often find myself looking at rabbits and zooming in to confirm whether it's a dog or not, but it's a really, really good piece of kit. Absolute game changer. I think we'd be lost without it.
And so, I mean, as you said, Elvis was kind of the first dog as such, Karen. But how many dogs have you helped since then to find, do you know?
So in 2025, we had 14 active searches over the year and 19 additional on top of that, which were just advice only. And 2026 so far was quite busy for the first sort of 5 weeks. And we had 6 active searches and 5 advice only with dogs missing. So yeah, quite a few since we started.
How does this keep happening then, Aaron? What is usually sort of the scenario for these dogs to go missing?
I think there is a variety of circumstances. As always, you know, accidents do happen. Generally, from what we see, it's not something that could be avoided. It doesn't tend to be neglect. There always is the exception to the case, but it's generally just an accident. You know, a door left slightly ajar, or you turn around for a second, the dogs decided to jump out of the car, whatever it may be. Generally it's quite innocent in terms of the reasons. Mm-hmm. Obviously our concerns around this time of year with the livestock and stuff as well, so we're quite keen to reiterate the advice to dog owners using our platform on that.
And that advice is essentially?
Basically, keep your dogs on a lead when you're around livestock. Make sure they're secure. Don't leave them unattended. Respect the countryside and respect the livestock.
Because we see our dogs as being family, but at the end of the day, they are animals. And so, you know, if they do smell something, they see something, they could go after it, as you said. So, and even dogs that we think they wouldn't do that, sometimes something just takes them, doesn't it? And they think, no, today I am going to. So you've got to be very careful. But it must, Karen, be an incredible thing to be involved with because, as I mentioned, they are our family. And so, you know, we all get really invested in the posts that you put up about these animals and you're trying to find the dogs. And it must be a really incredible moment when you do find them and reunite them with the family.
Yeah, it is. I think I cry on pretty much every single one. Obviously, the longer the search has been going on, the tireder everybody is. Everyone's sort of been putting everything sort of into finding the dog, and you've been speaking to the owners every day, you've been down at a plantation every day, especially with the Elvis search. I was actually on a work call when someone was trying to message me and let me know they got him, and I was just like on a video call at work just crying my eyes out because I got this message. So it's one of those where, yeah, it is really emotional. And even now, I think when we find a dog, it's just as emotional as it was sort of day one, because we've all got dogs as well, so we kind of put ourselves in their shoes.
So I guess then it comes to how it ended up being you two that are doing this. So what is your kind of background and how have you ended up doing this?
So my background's completely unrelated. The drone side of things, it was a business studies sort of project I did in school years ago. I'll not count the years, but at the time drones were unviable for sort of commercial use. It was more of an industrial thing, emergency services and stuff. It's always been something in the back of my head. Actually, the idea for me personally was when I kept seeing the dogs go missing in areas where it was physically inaccessible, Mackled cliffs and things like that. And I always sort of said a drone would be something that we needed for it. And then just seeing the effort that the guys were putting into the Elvis search and the money being spent on the drone, I thought I'll start a GoFundMe. Me and Karen had already started speaking at this stage, and yeah, we just bashed heads together and went from there.
And now, is it just the one drone you've got now?
At the moment, we've got one, yeah. We are obviously looking to scale up as time goes on, but we're diversifying our options because the drone's not the one-stop solution. So we're looking at, obviously, things in stages with the ground search teams and canine first aid and stuff like that. So it's just about balancing. Yeah.
And you've also had support, haven't you, with regards to the likes of canine first aid? You had some backpacks, I think, donated.
Absolutely. I mean, we've had a lot of support from across the island since we've started, with people reaching out asking how they can help. But more specifically recently, local business Q stores reached out with an offer for some backpacks, basically, which could be used as canine first aid kits, which was really well received. So we've just qualified one of our members in delivering that course, and we've ordered all the kit for the bags. So it was really good to get that call from a local who wanted to help.
Oh, that is brilliant. And we should reiterate, you are volunteers. I mean, you're doing this in your spare time, aren't you? I mean, Karen, how many hours is this taking up in your lives?
Again, another good question. The last month, not really any spare time other than admin, which is sort of formal charity registration applications that we've been going through the process for. Social media posts that we still need to do, formalising onboarding training for all the volunteers, again, trying to put a process in place for pet first aid training for our volunteers. So I guess it's more behind the scenes at the moment, but while with an active search going on, it's kind of every spare hour until bed, and then straight up in the morning and straight on a dog search when obviously we're not working, but it's kind of everything outside of core working hours for all of us.
That's incredible. How many other volunteers have you got so far?
We've got about 15 in total. So 15. Yeah.
And so you mentioned Elvis, Karen, and that's obviously going to be one of the stories that really, really stays with you, being the first one. Which other dogs have really kind of left an impression on you with the searches?
Millie, probably more recently, purely based on location. So Millie had managed to get herself down Doon Glen onto a cliff face. And the only reason we did locate Millie was because we had the thermal drone. So thermal drone located her, and there wouldn't have been any chance of us going down anywhere near her to even search to find her in the first place due to safety. And we made the call very early on that it was not something that we were equipped to deal with from a health and safety perspective. So Coast Guard were involved. They came down. It was just a very long wait at the top of the cliff, waiting to see whether they managed to get her. And it was, yeah, you had an owner there who was obviously quite emotional, quite upset, not being able to guarantee that the dog wouldn't move whilst the dog was about to be rescued. And it was just a bit of a, without saying cliffhanger is a kind of like pun there, but it was like genuinely just sort of we were all stood there just willing them to be able to get her safely. So I think that'll stick in mind for a long time. Other searches that was
Toffee
was sick of mind in the perspective of just, I guess, the media coverage afterwards that kind of blew up everything for us and pushed us more to formalise everything that we've been doing, purely because of all the media attention. So we've kind of gone, right, there's obviously a big demand for what we're doing here. Let's formalise the charity route. Let's formalise everything we're doing. So I think that's another one that 3 days, I think
it was 5 days by the end of it.
The Toffee.
Yeah.
And Toffee was so small as well. So there's that element as well of, oh, the poor little thing.
I think that as well with that one, Toffee had a lead attached.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Toffee had I think it was a 5 metre long line. Mm-hmm. And we were concerned that the line might get caught and then Toffee wouldn't be able to get shelter. And it was very cold temperatures at that point as well at the start of the year. So, yeah, it was pretty intense, that one as well.
And it's also led to the owners or the family of Toffee being motivated to help you, hasn't it?
Yeah, definitely. So we've had quite a lot of fundraisers recently, members of the public who I've either seen us on Facebook, they have had their dogs found by us, or yeah, just general interest. So do you want to talk a bit more around the fundraiser?
Yeah, certainly. So just since the start of 2026 alone, we've had 3 separate fundraisers ran by people who've just been touched by what we do. One of them on the back of the Millie search in Mackled, which is just finished, raised over £600, which is really good. Obviously the Toffee one, which I'm sure we all, or most of us know about by now. Toffee's family have done a really, really good fundraiser where they've walked basically the distance that Toffee, the search distance for Toffee every day, and they've raised over £1,000. And then another one who's just completed a marathon in Liverpool while fundraising directly for Noodles Canine Rescue as well, which is really, really good to see.
That is brilliant. And what does that mean to you? What will that money be used for?
Yeah, absolutely. So obviously we've sent off the registration process now for charity. There is costs involved in that. There's costs involved in the equipment that we have. For example, we use 4G enabled wildlife cameras. So if we have to leave a search area, we can still receive imaging if it's activated. They have a subscription fee. There's obviously insurances involved for public liability, the drone, etc. So it all adds up, and absolutely every penny helps just with going towards that.
Yeah. And so what are the plans then, Karen? So you're getting registered as a charity. What next?
We are looking to expand the team in terms of volunteers. We're looking to, like I say, do formal sort of onboarding training, formalise the pet first aid. We are looking again in future to, I guess, upgrade the drone setup from the perspective of our drone is not waterproof. To get a waterproof drone, it's quite a lot more cost-wise. So we'd look to get one of those, and we would also look to get some thermal imaging cameras for ground-based searches. So the drone's brilliant if you've got open space or if you need to search a coastline, if you've got a plantation. The drone, I don't want to say is useless, but it's not as helpful given the density of the trees.
It seems like a lot of them so far have been in plantations, haven't they?
So any sort of like handheld equipment that ground searchers can use is going to be something that's really helpful for us moving forward. So I guess, yeah, fundraising, grants, if we can get grant funds once we're registered as a charity, and then yeah, bulking up the sort of volunteer base would be the plan.
Well, if anyone does want to help you, then how can they do that?
Yeah, so obviously we've got a Facebook page at the minute, which is sort of our main point of contact. Basically, we're just asking anyone that's interested in helping just to drop us a message with what they want to do, what they can bring to the table, and we'll get back to them. We're currently sort of building the training packages for the different teams within the group. So we've got the drone team, and we've got a number of pilots now, two fully qualified on board and one in process, nearly finished. And then the ground search team, completely different training regime for them and the equipment that they need. So, yeah, if anyone's interested, just drop us a message. Yeah, lots of big things coming.
You've had quite a steep learning curve here, haven't you?
Yeah, absolutely. So even the drone alone. So, you know, the idea of this is what we need, you know, and we got it. And then it was like, oh, actually, hold on. We need permission from the government. We need to get insurance and licenses. And we've done all that. It was an uphill learning curve. But, you know, we're fully qualified now under the UK and Isle of Man CAA. And we've got some really good permissions from the Isle of Man CAA in terms of flying at night and restricted airspace and stuff like that. So they've been really supportive of us as well, which is good.
Which is amazing. And actually, it's worth raising the point as well, because I know lots of people want to help you. However, I noticed on one of the searches, people were turning up with their own drones. And it's not that you don't want help, but that can cause problems, can't it?
Absolutely. And I think what our main priority is always safety, first and foremost. Safety of the volunteers, safety of the members of the public that are there with great intentions to help. And these things happen. In that situation, it was just an unfortunate circumstance that we had to bring the drone down until we could regain control. But it was best practice, and what we'd done on our sort of post-search review, we looked at our way forward for that, and with discussions with the CAA, we've realised that it probably would be best to have a meeting point. If anyone wants to come and help, they can come and meet us and we can liaise, and we've got that plan in place now, so shouldn't happen again.
This has changed your lives, hasn't it?
Massively.
And the one thing we've not talked about yet, or the one being, is Noodle. Tell us who Noodle is.
Yeah, absolutely. So Noodle is our very own scent discrimination dog in training. Noodle is a 17-month-old collie, and once fully qualified and signed off, the Noodle should be able to track the scent of a missing dog from any of their belongings or an item that the family will be able to bring us, which will be a massive asset to the searchability that we have. And she's a lovely dog.
And it might help, I'm guessing, as well, because some of the dogs will be quite nervous when they're lost and some of them are reactionary. So I'm guessing that having a dog on site is going to help in that respect as well.
Yeah, I mean, case by case, there's always exceptions where the dog may actually cause a bit of further anxiety and stuff. But the ability to pick up a scent in that situation would mean that we could be in a standoff distance because we have an idea of where they're going, and then we can employ other methods. So it's just really about diversifying our options. You know, if the dog was causing an issue but had picked a scent up, then we could look to put the drone in, or yeah. But no, it's absolutely a massive asset.
Well, it's fascinating talking to you both because I can see that literally this has become a new life for you both, hasn't it? And it's serving our public and also our favourite members of our public. So we love our dogs, don't we, on the Isle of Man? We're big dog lovers. And I'm guessing, I know at the minute, obviously, it's Noodles Canine Rescue. Could you go out and help if other animals are lost as well? I mean, what's the kind of score there? Are we sticking strictly to hounds?
So, yeah, I think it's really important that there is the core sort of aim on mission of our charity will be canines and hounds. And that's not because we don't love every animal equally. It's just that cats, for example, they tend to be a bit more free spirits and they tend to go missing in urban areas where there's quite a lot of cats. And the resource requirement would probably be very high. They tend to fend for themselves quite often. You know, we aren't ruling other options out. And, you know, we'll always take the phone call, but our priority will be dogs first and foremost.
Yeah. So, Karen, if someone's dog does go missing, what would you suggest would be their kind of first steps? What should they do?
First steps when dog goes missing would be to, as counterintuitive as it sounds, stay where the dog went missing from would always be our initial thing. So 90% of dogs actually will attempt to circle back and return to where they went missing within the first 3 to 5 hours. So that's the first thing. They will hopefully have chased a rabbit, got distracted, and then they will circle back to where they left. They will use scent to find their way back to where they had left from. The next thing that would be the most important to do in that situation would be to call Noodles Canine Rescue. So we're always at the end of the phone. So staying at the point where the dog went missing and calling Noodles Canine Rescue, and we will offer initial advice to you. If the dog has disappeared from home or may return to home, it's always good to leave a door open where it's safe and you're able to have someone there waiting for the dog to return home. Another thing is to leave anything with scent of yours at the location where the dog went missing if you're unable to stay there as well.
Sometimes, you know, we were just having a conversation off air there about sometimes they are going to come back within a certain time, like you said. So at what point do you two kind of think, okay, now we need to deploy as such?
I suppose it's, again, slightly case dependent. I think what we tend to do as a general rule is we would take an hour to 2 hours at minimum in terms of the information gathering. That being said, there has been a couple of searches recently where we've deployed straight away, and that's just based on the circumstance. So Millie's a prime example. When we found out the location, the cliff and the potential dangers, there was a bit of urgency to that. A dog that's maybe gone for a little wander in our Chelligan plantation or something like that, we would give them that buffer zone and give the advice over the phone, and then hopefully it wouldn't be a requirement to deploy out with the full team. That doesn't mean that while that's happening, we're not getting everything ready and getting, you know, on the edge of the seat ready to go. So it's happened quite a few times where we've kitted up and we're ready to rock, and then you get the phone call to say the dog's fine, which is great. It's great, but then you're like, okay, well, put it all away again. So yeah,
because I'm guessing, I mean, it could be any time of day for you guys as well, couldn't it, Karen?
Yeah, all hours of the day. I think also what's worth mentioning here is dogs initially, when they go missing, the first, again, sort of 3 to 5 hours, they are still acting as if they're your pet dog. I think as time goes on, it's really important to emphasize the fact that dogs go into what we call survival mode, where the dog will no longer act as if it's your pet dog. It will be effectively a wild wolf, as we try to describe to people. So we'll be in survival mode. We'll be caring about water, shelter, safety. So everything is perceived to be a threat at that point. So again, we emphasize members of the public searching, or even owners searching at this stage when the dog has transitioned into survival mode. It's difficult to pinpoint exactly when that will happen, but once the dog is in survival mode, the dog will not run over when you call its name. The dog will not recognize you immediately. It's all a case of slow and steady, get down low, wait for the dog to sort of smell, recognize you, and the dog will hopefully come over on its own. But yeah, the dog will act completely differently and not as if it's your pet dog anymore, which is surprising for everyone when we speak to them. And even after you've told people, sometimes they're like, no, Johnny's really friendly and he'll run over to me as soon as he sees me. And everyone's surprised at that moment where their dog's been missing for a day or however long, and the dog is very reluctant to come to them. Mm-hmm. And everyone's always shocked. So
I did not know that. Do you know what? It just reminds me of that lovely video of Toffee, which is, you know, you can see them sort of waiting for Toffee to come over. I mean, it really does tug at the heartstrings, doesn't it?
Yeah, 100%.
And of course, there are actually some really good social media pages out there, aren't there, Aaron? The sort of community pages like the Pets Lost and Found and that sort of thing. And that sort of shows that the Isle of Man public as well want to help, don't they?
Yeah, certainly. I think the spirit on the island is great when it comes to that. I mean, not just in this world, but definitely there's a number of really active groups on Facebook, and they're all run by different people, and they're more than happy to share our information posts posts, and quite often some of our first contacts come through a dog owner posting in the one group that they're in, unaware of Noodles Canine Rescue, and immediately someone will comment under it and tag our page. So it's a really, really good community for that. Yeah.
So if someone is does have a missing dog and they need your support and your help there, Aaron, how is the best way for them to get in touch with you?
So there's a couple of options at the moment. So the Facebook page is kind of one of the prime options. But we do have a mobile number and a WhatsApp business. So the mobile 332091. If you save that and, you know, you're on the ground, you can't access Facebook or whatever it may be, ring that and we'll take the details. And then finally, we've got an email address, which is just noodlescaninerescue@gmail.com. And we can take reports through any of those means.